What I wanted to get to, I want to talk about just the idea. You talk a lot about safe spaces and the middle class and suburbia. A lot of the horror movies we think about from the 80s and 70s, I mean, like, so you have things like Jason Voorhees, Friday the 13th, which takes place in a summer camp. And like, not everybody can go to summer camp. That's like a very specific economical group of people who can go to summer camp. You know, so like you were saying about the babysitter, like you're sending your children to summer camp and they, you know, then mayhem ensues, which is like the babysitter fear beyond the babysitter fear, because not only, you know, like your kids generally are like teens themselves, but then they're in the care of teens who are going to make out and not pay attention to your kids, and it's going to be just scary. Or you have something where like Freddy Krueger, who is supposed to be a worker in a suburban school, and you know, like all workers in suburban schools, he's just a scary, terrible person and sells his soul to nightmare demons and mayhem ensues. But you talk a lot about that, and the car is a safe space, which is very suburban. Here, we're on Long Island, Syosset, and Long Island was built by Levitt and Moses. I mean, you know, like the whole idea of public transportation being something you don't want. You want everyone to have a car. You don't want public transportation in this area. And you have so many, not just urban legends, but also horror that deals with cars. Talk a little bit about that, because I found that fascinating.
Talking about cars as safe spaces, you covered a lot. We'll start with cars and then I'll move into schools and summer camps. So cars, what's really interesting is around the time that we're dealing with, like when suburbs and middle class spaces were really kind of coming up, was also around the time when cars became much more readily available. And also, I want to say it's like the mid 60s is when it begins to get really expansive highway system. You saw some of it in the 50s with like, you know, exploitation films, you know, about, you know, motorcycle gangs and racing film, you know, like that anxiety started there. But really into when you start to get into like the 70s, you start to see a huger, like a much bigger expanse of highway systems that allowed people to get from urban spaces into the suburbs within minutes. You had people of a lower income that had cars. And so then you have, and this is again, something we're dealing with right now, like even just recently where a Black man was in a suburb and was assaulted by white people who were like, why, you know, do you live here? They didn't believe that he lived there. So you have those anxieties of, you see people who don't belong in the suburbs and the suburbs. And the car used to be, especially in the 50s, an economic symbol of, you know, of the middle class, of having enough money, not only to have one car, but maybe two, so that your wife could run errands while you were at work. And having that symbol then be somewhat degraded because, you know, poor people, people of color now have it. And to some extent, some had to have it because there weren't bus systems running in the neighborhoods where they worked, as you know.
Right, exactly. Right? Like, you know, you're gonna have somebody work in your house, but you know, they're not allowed to live in your area because the deed to your house says you can't sell to a person of color. So that, you know, so how are, and you don't have a bus to get them to work in your house. So how is that gonna happen? Well,
right, then they're going to have to, like, you know, have cars to get to their job, or have a family that has, you know, one car that's driving everybody to where they need to go. But yeah, like there is a horror movie. But I know it's a pretty like significant one. I think it was one of Steven Spielberg's first, basically, you know, the perfect young new director film, because it's a dude in a car on the freeway being harassed by a dude in a truck. And you actually see
the duel.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and but it looks like there's like a whole bunch of other like car movies that kind of came from it, but this is the one that was like you were saying was Steven Spielberg was involved with it, and that was like a Peterbilt truck trying to run a car off a road.
Yep. And I remember like the reason it always sticks in my mind was that it like portions of it really you see it recreated, like I said, in Jeepers Creepers with the big truck, which is such a fascinating like deviation, because that movie primarily is not about, it's not a road movie, not a car movie, it's mostly about like a supernatural creature hunting people for their organs. But it is that same like anxiety of being on the road away from, you know, civilization, right, quote unquote, which I think is a lot of those anxieties that you come with the like the car. And other movies like that, where, you know, those are the earlier versions where freeways became ubiquitous and they allowed a kind of desegregation of the roads, really. And then that, you know, that creeps into the fear of like, who are you on the road with, which we see like repeated again and again. But, it is fascinating to see almost often, much like, home invasion, the perspective of who's afraid, like right, who's vulnerable, is almost always like a middle class person in their, you know, standard middle class car. And then you see like the threats are coming from things that relate to the working class or the poor, or, you know, and
so I mean, just thinking about, no, just like, you know, on that, because I know we're talking about, you know, and like we're recording out of Long Island, there's that old, you know, that old story about how Robert Moses built the highways on Long Island with the bridges at a certain height so trucks, yes, and buses could not go under them.
Yep.
For a very specific reason.
Yep. And so, you know, it's fascinating to me, and I talk a little bit in my thread about like how that type of fear mongering essentially helped reinforce things like redlining and really like, leaving the problems, quote unquote, of the city in the city, which, you know, the effect of that was kind of feeding into systemic oppression of the most marginalized people. But it also, I think it doesn't, The thing that struck me, especially when we were talking about, you know, suburbs and about the idea of that, like this idea that the urban spaces and people who exist in them, mostly people of color, are predatory, and that how that's kind of a misrepresentation of the actuality, which is that suburban spaces are actually predatory upon urban spaces. I thought a lot about recently reading about, it's a suburb of New York City, maybe, but I'm sure this is true of a lot of places, is that the majority of the police force doesn't live in the city. It lives in the suburbs. So you have people who don't live in a neighborhood policing a neighborhood and taking the economic benefits, which we now know police forces make a huge amount of money, and taking it out of that space to a suburban area, often maybe even a completely different town, that is essentially, you know, is essentially economically benefiting on over-policing of marginalized people, and how that is absolutely true, especially if like the, you know, housing crisis, I'm in Seattle, we're going through the housing crisis, of that, you know, that these, a majority of the people who are making the most amount of money in the city don't necessarily live there, and they're taking their profit someplace else to a space that they can segregate, so that only, you know,
right.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you know, then we can get in the whole thing about how, you know, housing is connected to educational funding and on.
And that kind of brings me, and really quickly, I just want to just throw out there, just because I think it's crazy. So, you know, regarding the duel, there was stock footage from episodes of The Incredible Hulk used in that movie.
Oh,
Jesus. And it was written by Richard Matheson, who, if you are a fan of the original Twilight Zone, as I am, he's all over that. But he originally published it as a short story in Playboy.
Yes, there's a lot of horror and sci-fi writers I know that have been featured in Playboy. You know, I mean, it is funny, but it also is true that the people were reading it for the articles.
I don't know. I don't know if that's the most. I mean, it's not, but it's in my mind, like, because that's the old. You know, thing that people go back to. No, I'm just reading it for the articles. But just the fact that, like, people did really read it for the articles is probably, like, my biggest paradigm shift of the moment.
I mean, I feel like, you know, we get those interesting disruptors from different spaces. Like, I would say right now, Teen Vogue is doing a lot of amazing, you know, work that you wouldn't have associated with Teen Vogue.
Yes, you don't mess with Teen Vogue. It's like, no, when I was a kid, like, Teen Vogue was something completely different, but now it's like, oh my God, did you see what Teen Vogue published? And like a few years ago, I'm like, wait, what? Are we, what? You're talking to me about what? And then it's like, oh no, Teen Vogue is legitimate.
Yes, yeah. They're doing amazing work. In fact, I was just reading an article today that was examining fandom and parasocial relationships. And so I'm like, and this is, you know, these are the conversations.
Teen Vogue, the words fandom being involved in Teen Vogue. I think that as a teen, I probably would have read more Teen Vogue if that was the case and gotten a lot from it.
Right? Like, oh man, I remember, like, my horizons opening when I discovered, you know, the meta corner of fandoms where people were just talking about themes and things, and I'm like, oh, this is a thing. Like, we can do this, and it's not just, you know, people randomly talking, you know, individually on message boards about stuff like this. But yes, so and I think Richard Matheson also wrote I Am Legend.
I believe he did. But, you know, I know you mentioned, like, the car, as in, like, Christine is another, like, that's like another horror movie where the car is a prominent villain, but there's more to it than that.
Right, like, well, and I think, you know, again, it is all of the duel, the car, Christine,
Killdozer.
A whole, like, list of vehicle specific horror movies, but I think those, especially Christine, is a great embodiment of that idea, that very specific 1950s idea, 1950s, 1960s, of the car being a vessel of freedom, and which we know is, like, really specifically a masculine idea. It's a great example of how then, you know, we see movies like The Duel showing us a form of masculine anxiety through horror, you know, being vulnerable, being vulnerable to something that is larger, that can be physically violent and dominate you, and being out in spaces where you don't have resources to help you.
Right.
You know, and the idea that, you know, in order to have a vehicle, you have to be, like, you know, you have to have the economic independence to be, you know, a man, and to have that kind of knocked down is a terrifying idea, but it's definitely one of its time.
Okay, so Richard Matheson, he wrote I Am Legend, which was, I think, originally, was that, like, the Omega Man, I Am Legend?
Yes. And most people, like, the newer audiences know it from the Will Smith movie, which changed the ending, I think, the theatrical version.
The
original version of that, I find it fascinating because, similar to, you know, makes sense that he wrote for Twilight Zone, because I feel like Twilight Zone, and especially that story, has a very specific narrative that it's saying to, you know, what could reasonably be considered his target audience of white men, you know, of like, essentially, like, we're the ones that should be dying out. Like, we're the old dinosaurs. We're the monsters. I mean, that's essentially what the story is about, is realizing we're the monsters and we need to make way.
Right. And, yeah.
Which is really fascinating. And but you see that in like the Twilight Zone too. There's a lot of different segments that I feel like, you know, I go back and rewatch them now and I go, oh, no wonder I really liked this when I was a kid, because yeah. It definitely was still towards that particular audience, but it was saying some really fascinating things, like I Am Legend, and relating that to a more contemporary horror movie that's based on a novel, Girl with All the Gifts.
Mm.
Which is one of my favorite movies, just straight up. I have not read the book, I will admit to that. Mostly because I liked, in the movie, they switch the races of the characters so that it's a little black girl in the lead. And I liked that so much, I didn't really want to go back to the book and see it in original form. But I like the movie. Somewhat spoilers.
Yes, okay.
Because similarly, it asks the question, it changes the perspective, because so many like horror movie, like zombie movies and whatnot, or mass monster movies are about like humanity trying to, you know, struggle forth, and this one kind of points to the idea, especially in the film, when they make a young black girl essentially the face of this new species of humans, it asks the question of like, why do we have to die, you know, for the old world to stay? And you know, like, it makes it very, you know, it's not subtle, but I like it because it takes that old trope of horror and kind of goes, okay, let's lay it right, let's be real blatant about the, you know, about the themes happening here, and then let's really ask the question of what world is being fought for. And I mean, if you look in a lot of like Romero's horror movies, a lot of them, the zombies, you know, he's talking similarly about this, about this idea of that we view a new world and change as an aggressive thing, when it's really not, and honestly isn't a new world.
And how you were talking about the Twilight Zone, I actually have a movie that I had been thinking about, The People Under the Stairs, which supposedly Jordan Peele's company is doing some sort of remake of, which I like screamed really loud and scared my husband when I heard that. But that movie, that's all good. Yeah, that movie is crazy in so many ways. And again, it's not perfect, but when I was reading your thread, I thought back to it because it embodies a lot of that. And the slumlord is like the bad guy, but there's so much more going on there.
I like to think of People Under the Stairs as being a really great example of sometimes sometimes he can be very subtle, but really I feel like part of what makes his really great stuff great is he is always at 11, and he's subtlety is for peasants when it comes to him. And that one, it was like there's no subtext.
No,
like I'm literally gonna make actual symbols of paternalism and white patriarchy and matriarchy be incestuous,
and they steal children, and they deface them, and then you know, you have the whole idea of, you know, they're mistreating the poor black people and the properties that they own, and then they have like their little girl who's dressed in white, they have to keep safe. It's just like, it had all the things. I'm very curious to see what Jordan Peele does with it, because it had a lot going on there. And I don't know if it was delivered. I don't think anything is delivered perfectly, but I remember watching it and just kind of being like, huh.
I watched it for the first time recently, because I had not watched it when it first came out. mostly because like the marketing for it at the time was really weird, and I wasn't.
It really was. Yeah.
Then I watched it and I was like, this is great. I mean, it is not subtle at all. Essentially talking about how, you know, true white affluence comes from cannibalism. It's literally that, you know, eating itself and eating its younger generation, try to force it to conform to the shape that is ludicrous and unrealistic. And also it's, you know, it's parasitic. So yeah, no, the people under the stairs, I really feel like the thing that, I mean, execution.
Yeah.
Not that great.
But
it was earnest. And I think one of the things that was really fascinating about it was that it was explicitly talking about how those idyllic suburban spaces are parasitic upon urban spaces. And it's something that we didn't see. I'm like, I can't even think of other, even more like serious movies that really address that. So, and I'm excited about Jordan Peele taking that on, because I think he has the finesse to be able to take all those themes and ideas and put them in a package where it's a little more focused.
Right.
A little less stereotypical.
Yeah.
But it's still entertaining and engaging. And man, that was a team up that I wish could have happened before Craven passed, because woof, the things that they could have made together.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I came to it later on as well, because I started watching horror later in life. I was afraid of everything as a kid, but I remember just, you know, I was watching horror movie after horror movie, and then that one came up. And I remember the marketing, and then I watched it and I was like, huh, like I said, again, execution, not perfect, but there was definitely something going on there that I don't think a lot of people at that time really understood. Because if you look at some of the, I think it was a split between Siskel and Ebert. Like, one was like, oh no, horrible. And the other one was like, well, there's something going on here, which embodies a lot of what, you know, of this idea that I was reading in your thread. And also, I mean, it's not a horror movie, but thinking back to something like Adventures in Babysitting, where her friend runs away and is stuck in a phone booth in the city, and she's afraid of all of these people who are, I guess, I don't know if that was supposed to be Penn Station or whatever. It comes up in themes that aren't horror too, in things that aren't horror.
And it was like, especially the 80s, there was a lot of, I mean, that's the thing, like, there was a lot of stuff in the ether that made it into those films that, you know, we don't necessarily, I don't think we remember them because we weren't processing it at the time, but when we come back to it, like, I mean, the whole, what did Reagan call it? Was the welfare queen?
Yes.
Like, and that whole idea of, like, again, the parasitic poor, of the idea that, you know, that the urban spaces were dangerous, unwelcoming, that people of color were duplicitous and untrustworthy, all of those are there. I mean, from, in, like I said, horror, comedy, I'm trying to remember, a lot of that, even, like, there are ones that I think do a lot of interesting work about deconstructing that. And again, like, turning the lens, although I'm trying to remember it. It's not Easy Money. It's Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy.
Trading Places.
Trading Places is the British home improvement show.
Oh, completely different. Yeah.
So Trading Places. Yeah. And which was like a great, like, kind of, you know, reactionary comedy to, you know, Reagan era 80s. But again, it was much more of the extremes. It was poverty kind of taking, you know, wealth to task, rather than going, what's going on in the middle ground there? But it was taking those archetypes and kind of playing off each other. But again, it was all there. And yeah, that same idea of that our urban space is a scary, terrible place, even though it wasn't, is in a lot of media of the time. And definitely, even when it's not actually there, it's there, like you said, like with Nightmare on Elm Street, of that your children who are supposed to be safe in their homes are even, or even in their dreams.
Yeah, in their bed. Yeah.
That they're being threatened.